And I just thank God today that my kids are grown and that now I have a union job that pays more wages, that I can take care of myself. But to go out here and shop on what someone at McDonald's makes that has kids, it's really sad.
One of the things I want to point out, and some of the talking heads here in the Pittsburgh area, and that's what they are, the talking heads. I'm a talking head, they're a talking head. Are going to say, well, those people at XYZ big box food store, they don't deserve to get $15 an hour. Look, we've got law enforcement officers over here in this township that only make $9 an hour. Or we've got firemen over in this township that only make $8.50 an hour. You're fighting for everybody.
Yes.
People at McDonald's, that cop, that fireman, that paramedic, that person working in an office, you're fighting for everybody.
Right. We deserve to be comfortable just as much as these politicians, these people in these big offices and corporations.
You know, there's a lot of people out there that say, you don't deserve it, you don't work hard enough, so on and so forth. Tactfully, what do you say to them?
I'm human. I deserve to be able, everybody deserves to be able to feed their family, to feed themselves, to live.
My question is why, if I don't go into big box store XYZ, do I have to pay for their employees' health care, housing, and food because they're too cheap to, as a taxpayer? Why do I have to pay for that? I think it's wrong.
Well, I'm not asking you to take care of me. I'm out here working side by side, grinding just like you are. My job may not be as easy or laid back as yours is, but we're out here grinding every day, 8-16 hours. Some people working 2 and 3 jobs.
You're right. And you know something? Those companies that you're working for, they should take care of their people.
That's right. We're taking care of you, pretty much.
Absolutely. And we appreciate it. And, you know, Angela, I got to thank you for being here today. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Continue the fight. You're doing God's work.
Thank you.
I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Laborers Talk Radio.
Terry Riley's In C. Composed in 1964, this minimalist masterpiece would go on to become one of the most influential works of the 20th century. Join the A Different Nature Collective Monday, September 29th from 8 p.m. until midnight for a 50th anniversary celebration of this seminal work. In the final hour, from 11 p.m. to midnight, there will be a special live in-studio performance from some of Portland's top creative musicians. So tune in Monday, September 29th from 8 p.m. until midnight. That's Terry Riley's In C.
Tune in to KBRU on Wednesday, October 1st for Turning the Tide on Climate Change.
An all-day special about climate change and the actions we must take now.
And don't miss a special guest, Naomi Klein, talking about her new book, This Changes Everything, Capitalism versus the Climate at 1 p.m.
That's Turning the Tide on Climate Change on Wednesday, October 1st, 8 a.m., 4 p.m. on
KBOO Portland.
The time is 6:05 and you're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM Community Radio. And coming up next at 6 is Labor Radio, a special program for an hour. And after that will be Hard Knock at 7. And then at 8 o'clock is A Different Nature with a very, very special program with Terry Riley's In C. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland Saturday Market, From Our Hands to Yours, celebrating 41 years of American arts and crafts, freshly prepared foods, with an international flavor, and local music every Saturday and Sunday from March 1st through Christmas Eve in Waterfront Park. Local artisans, international food, live music. And more information can be found online at PortlandSaturdayMarket.com.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Good evening. This is Labor Radio, and I'm Lane Ponce, your co-host. And this evening, my co-host is
Michael Morrow, your co-host.
Yes.
And this is Fifth Monday.
Fifth Monday.
Which is why you may not recognize our voices unless you're a regular listener.
Well, they come up about 4 times a year.
We do.
I'm sure we're memorable and no one would forget us. Tonight we have a very special guest. We have Mr. Tom Chamberlain with us. He was elected the president of Oregon AFL-CIO in 2007. Is that right, Tom?
Actually, 2005.
2005? Oh, yes. I see that. Executive board first. And you are a native Oregonian.
Yes.
And you grew up in a home where, this is a quote we have on you, the difference between cold cereal for breakfast and cold cereal for dinner was a union job. Now, what do you mean by that exactly? Who has cold cereal for dinner?
Those who can't afford a warm meal. My dad had a lot of jobs, and we ate best when he had a good union job. And when he didn't, we had cold cereal for dinner.
Yes. And
because that's all there was to eat.
So there you have it.
Which is probably something that folks who work at Walmart understand on a regular basis. It's cold cereal for your kids.
Yes. Well, it's kind of has some nutrients, but not as much as a good union job has nutrients.
Yeah.
And you were in the United States Air Force, and you joined the Portland Firefighters Association in 1977.
Yes.
And you were elected as a union Secretary Treasurer in 1988?
Yes.
Okay, you're moving right along with the decades here. And you served in that capacity for a decade. And then you started lobbying full-time for the Oregon State Firefighters Council. And you were elected Vice President and then President of that council.
Yeah.
And then Firefighters' biggest Oregon local elected Tom to succeed former City Commissioner Randy Leonard as President. And that was in 2001. So we're getting closer to the here and now. So what happened between 2001 and now?
Let's see. I was president of the firefighters until January of 2004. And then I went to work for the governor, Kulongowski, March of 2005. And I served in that capacity for 2 years. And I was fortunate to get elected to this position.
And this position is?
President of the Oregon AFL-CIO.
And that stands for American Federation of Labor and?
Congress of Industrial Organizations.
Okay. That's right. Okay. And this evening, Mr. Michael Morrow has done a lot of research and has a lot of questions for you. We also will be entertaining many call-ins, as many as we can handle tonight. So we're going to talk with Tom for a few minutes, and then we'll take call-ins at 503-231-8187. So be sure and get your questions for Tom. Okay, Michael, it's yours.
Sure. I am celebrating, yay me, the 45th anniversary of my bachelor's degree in political science. And I have been a political wonk for long before that. So, yes, indeed, I'm fairly old. Elections excite me. They really do. They have disappointed me more than once over the last 45 years, but I'm looking forward to November 4th this year, which is our what is called an off-year election. On-year elections are those every 4 years when we elect a president. Off-year, no president, but this year we do have a couple of significant elections in Oregon. We're electing or re-electing, as Labor hopes, our governor and our senator, U.S. senator. We'll be talking about that, and we'll also be talking about other legislative races, some Senate races, some in the Oregon legislature, some Senate races and some House races. And we might even get to one or two of the initiatives that will be on the ballot.
Great.
So one of the things we asked Tom to do was to come in and be prepared from Labor's perspective, as the chief spokesperson for Labor in Oregon, from Labor's perspective, talk about the election. Just to kick it off is the generic question, which I'm sure most of our listeners can answer fairly easily, but in case there's one or two out there who can't, the question is, why should working families be interested in the November election?
The other way to phrase that is, why shouldn't they be?
Ah,
this election, the Koch brothers and the one percenters, the very rich folks, they're doing everything in their power across this country to get people not to go to the polls and to put barriers in front of them. We just saw a Supreme Court decision out of Ohio that would shut down early voting. We have an imbalance in this country. It started with the Supreme Court decision that allowed corporations to give unlimited amount of money into the political process. And since that occurred, I think in 2008, 2009.
That the Valeo decision?
There were two decisions. The earlier one was Citizens United, and I think it was 2000, right before the 2010 election. And what we've seen since then is the rise of corporate power. The Koch brothers, who own warehouses and other organizations, have dumped millions and millions of dollars into the election. You have not seen the power of wealth in election unless you go back at the level that we're seeing today, unless you go back to the election of 1896. In the election of 1896, the robber barons, the Rockefellers, the Carnegies dumped in today's dollars $83 million into that election to elect William McKinley. And they outspent the progressive candidate 10 to 1. That election was so blatant in the 1% power, the robber baron power, that you started to see campaign reform and restrictions on corporate giving in our campaign laws across the country. Of course, that was turned upside down in 2009 or 10. But you can draw a lot of parallels between what we're seeing today, which is a decline of the middle class, great disparity in wealth, back to the 1890s. And what makes the 1890s unique in American history is that you saw the rise of this progressive movement, a movement where folks didn't organize around political parties, but rather organized around issues, the eight-hour day, giving women the right to work, to vote, child labor laws. And what you saw in the election of 1896 with William McKinley elected, you saw him in his second term select Theodore Roosevelt as his running mate. He was assassinated, and then you saw the rise of the progressive agenda and elections and the power of the ballot box. The power of the ballot box is what got us Social Security. The power of the ballot box got us wage and hour laws. The power of the ballot box got us hours and safety regulation in this country. So those folks who say that elections don't matter, if you're collecting a Social Security check, elections matter. Those of you who have a collective bargaining agreement are making middle class wages, election matters. Those folks who are unfortunately are on food stamps, elections matter, because without the power of the ballot box, you wouldn't have food stamps. And I could go on and on. But throughout history, the power of the ballot box has been the voice of working people across this country, and the power to get our people out has made the difference.
So just to make sure that people know, it's not too late to register. When is the last day for registration?
The election is always held on the first Tuesday in November. This is Michael, which a lot of folks, me included, think is a fairly stupid day to hold an election because it's a work day. So working people have a harder time getting to the polls. As we saw in 2000, when working people showed up in Florida and the lines were so long that they gave up and walked away. And we all know what happened in Florida in 2000. So, but it is still the first Tuesday in November, the 4th. Some folks think we ought to hold it on a weekend and make it both days. In Oregon, we have the luxury of being a mail-in ballot state. So your ballots will go out on or about October 14th, 3 weeks prior to the election. You can register up to 3 weeks prior to the election, October 14th. You can go online right now to OregonVotes.org, and you can register. If you have moved since the last election, you're no longer registered. You need to go in there and make sure that you are registered for this election. So, crucial date. Keep that one in mind, October 14th, to get yourself registered. Make sure you get a ballot, and then those ballots need to be turned in by 5 o'clock on Tuesday, November 4th. So that's the logistics of it. The working people, usually there's enough of us to win elections. The problem is, especially when there's no president on the ballot, that oftentimes we neglect to vote. It's just something that's on the back burner somewhere. So Tom made a lot of points. The point he didn't make is for those of you who enjoy your weekends, you can thank the ballot box, and you can thank unions for the fact that we get 2 days a week off. Some of us get 2 days a week off. Some of us work 7 days. Because we, as Mr. Bush said when he was told that there are many people out there working three jobs, he said, isn't this a wonderful country that you can work so many jobs? Well, most of us would rather have a living wage, which some people think is now $15 an hour, which is one of the issues we might be looking at fairly soon, including in Oregon as a minimum wage. But what I do want to begin to talk about is who's running and who we should pay attention to. And on November 4th, when we turn our ballots in, which boxes should be checked off? So you want to start at the top, Tom, and sure. Go governor and senator?
Yes. I mean, you have a clear choice in who you select as governor. Actually, let's start with Jeff Merkley.
Okay.
Since he's at the top of my pile here. I've known Jeff Merkley when he was Speaker of the House. I knew him when he was a legislator. And I know a lot about Jeff. He has blue-collar roots. He's a son of a machinist. He grew up in a blue-collar neighborhood. In fact, today he lives in Park Rose. And if he was sitting here, he'd be proud of the fact he still lives in a blue-collar neighborhood. This is a guy, when he first got to, first day he was in Washington, D.C., before he was sworn in, he signed on to labor law reform. There's a champion of working people. Here was a man who took on Wall Street. Here was a man who took on Senate leadership and tried to change the filibuster rules, which is an arcane set of rules that really slows down and adds to the stagnation that we have in the U.S. Senate. He supports minimum wage. He supports legislation that would end the tax breaks that encourage companies to offshore their businesses. On the other hand, his opponent, Monica Wiebe, doesn't support the minimum wage. She supports continuing to provide incentives to companies to offshore their business. And her biggest backers are the Koch brothers, who have contributed $3.6 million worth of TV ads on her behalf. This is a person who really doesn't relate to working people's issues, bread and butter issues. You know, I call them the fair shot agenda of good wages.
If I might interject, for those who don't know, she is the Republican candidate. She's a pediatric surgeon, and she might be a wonderful surgeon, but she earns $1 million a year as a surgeon.
That's correct.
So for those of us who don't earn in that ballpark, we're wondering whether or not she might actually represent our interests were she to get elected. Let me quickly cut in and make the FCC happy. This is KBOO. 90.7, for those of you who are listening. And we do have callers. So let's
Do we have a caller on the line now? Do you have a question for us?
Yes. I'd like to know why, because she makes a million, she's not good. I mean, what would be her specialty? Would she be practicing medicine in her job? Or?
I don't think making $1 million disqualifies you or really has any bearing on whether you get elected to office. I mean, we supported the Kennedys when they ran, and they were multimillionaires.
Yeah,
FDR, we just saw a series on FDR and Teddy Roosevelt, multimillionaires who really changed this country for the better because they understood where workers were coming from. They understood that people were struggling, and they really championed the causes of changing America to address that. The problem with Monica Webley isn't that she makes $1 million. The problem is where she stands on the issues, such as minimum wage, such as offshoring our jobs, and such as supporting an agenda supported by the Koch brothers.
Yeah, we don't want the Koch brothers. I worked at Georgia Pacific as a menial laborer. Now, I'm over 70, I'm over 75. And I worked really $3 an hour jobs most of my life. Even at General Dynamics, I was getting only $3 or $4. But it was a different era for unions. I was in the Teamsters.
I've
been in unions all my life. But I want to say, once they get into politics, money corrupts. It really corrupts people. It's really unfortunate, because I've never had much money. I mean, a lot. I've had enough for my little home, and I save, constantly save to survive. But I'm just an older person who's trying to survive in an era that's going into war here with all these foreign attack, whatever's happening in Africa or what have you. Now, on a stay on the topic here, what would you suggest for unions? For an older person like myself, as an old union person, the Teamsters drove trucks and on, where are we going to go with all these?
Okay, thank you for your question, and we'll address that now, and thank you for calling in. Okay,
you,
go
ma'am.
Ahead, Tom.
Thank you.
Where do we go? We have to support quality candidates, and candidates that have a history of staying with us through thick or thin and doesn't sell out to Wall Street, and that's why we're supporting Jeff Merkley. This is a guy who's stood with us. There's never been a trade agreement that he's voted for. Not only that, but what I appreciate about Jeff Merkley is he picks up the phone himself. I've been called from the floor of the United States Senate on issues that he was going to address, and he just doesn't call me. He calls other labor leaders. He calls community leaders. He calls people he trusts, and he's really, what I like about Jeff is he really wants to feel the pulse of what's happening on the street, and that's what makes him different than not just Monica Webby, but about any other candidate in the United States Senate that I know of.
And the issue that the caller addressed, which you know, I've been collecting Social Security for 3 years now myself, after paying into it for a long time. Senator Merkley supports Social Security, strengthening the system, weakening the system, and he absolutely opposes privatizing the system. Dr. Webby's party would love to do that. They would love to take all our Social Security funds and put it on the Wall Street stock market, and on the premise that roll the dice and maybe we'll make a lot of money. Well, as we saw in 08, 09, and 2010, they lost a lot of money. So folks who depend on Social Security, and many of us do, to get by, Jeff Merkley stands next to us and says we will make sure that check comes in and it doesn't get reduced, and we'll work hard to protect it.
I think we have another candidate on the line. Maybe they have a question. I think. Let's see. Is there someone on the line with us now? Hello?
Okay, well, there's a lot of candidates out there.
Right, and we do have a call-in number, which is 503-231-8187.
Well, if it's okay, why don't we move on to the governor's race? I just happened to meet with the governor this afternoon.
Just happened to meet with him.
Before coming over here. No, it was great. What I know about John Kitzhaber is he is very concerned. In fact, this is what we talked about. Was wage inequality and the growing gap between those of us who work for a living and the 8% or the 10% that own companies and really are generating a great deal of wealth in this country. I mean, the discussion is, while folks talk about creating middle class jobs, they talk about creating jobs. He makes a connection between a union card and a middle class job. I mean, if you think about it, you have to have the leverage to bargain to create those jobs. You can create all jobs you want, but unless you have power to make sure those jobs pay well, that they have benefits, you're just creating jobs. And what we've seen is more and more service sector jobs that tend to be low paying, that aren't unionized. And I think his philosophy on how we move forward is what is needed in Oregon.
And the for those of you who read it, the Oregonian Today's paper on the left column, front page, had an interesting series of pieces of information. It's called, the title was "The Middle Class is Under Siege," which is something that we all know and understand. And they listed five areas where the middle class, which is most of us, is getting slammed, the last one being less wealth. And this is to Tom's point about that. And what it says is, for families in the middle 20% of incomes, that's folks right in the middle, 40%. Less, 40% more. So the median's is a good measure. For those of you who are in that middle 20%, your median net worth fell 17% from 2010 to 2013. That means, you know, when you adjust for inflation, your buying power probably fell 20% over that time period. And the decline, especially in the private sector, the decline of unions and union membership, and the ability of unions to say, no, this is not working for us. We need people to make a decent salary. You know, they go hand in hand with what's happening in the middle class. We have another caller.
We do. Let's see what they have to comment upon. And who's on the line with us now? Whoa.
Okay. Well, next time
I think we have some people kind of
a little faster.
Yeah, we've got some people.
Please,
if you do
call in, please hang on because we will get to you.
Yeah, and the number again is 503-231-8187. We'll see who makes it through the.
We have a caller coming up, or
not?
We
quite
move
yet.
On to. Since you just were speaking with the governor today, when he's reelected, what can we be looking for over the next 4 years in Oregon with respect to issues that are especially of interest to working families?
I believe that the governor has been such a strong supporter of infrastructure projects, understanding that those jobs spin off into other jobs. I think you'll see more emphasis on infrastructure. When you talk about infrastructure, you talk about roads, you talk about bridges, and yes, they create building trade jobs, but there also are avenues for commerce and how we move goods and services up and down this state. What folks tend to forget is that our airport is unique. We have zero grade railroads here. We have an infrastructure for products that is second to none. And we need to be competitive, and I see a real commitment by this governor to maintain that competitiveness and get more business here.
Okay, I think maybe we've got some calls coming in, but until they're on the line here, I think we're okay. Is someone on the line with us now? Hello?
Hi, my name's John. I'm a longtime proud member of KABU and sustaining member, and keep up the great work. And I tell people all the time, please vote. It's your choice. And if you don't vote, this situation in this country, empire, is going to get worse. We got to use the democracy we have. And if we don't, we're in big trouble. And I generally vote for Democrats because Democrats have brought us things like Social Security, workman's comp, unemployment insurance, civil rights, voting rights, and please look at the party's position before you lay down your vote. And thanks for talking about Social Security. That's another scam the right wing Wall Street is trying to run on us, the Koch brothers. That the way I understand it is the max right now that people pay FICA, Federal Insurance Contributions Act, is about $116,000. And they keep telling us, oh, Social Security's in trouble, it'll never last. All they got to do is raise the cap, and we'll have a lot more money coming in. The way I understand it, it's good till about 2031 right now. And so please vote, because needless to say, if we don't, the right wing wins.
Thanks, Sean. Great comments. Thank you for supporting KBOO. As you point out, voting or democracy is kind of like muscles. It's use it or lose it. And we've got, you know, there are folks right now in Hong Kong. There are folks right now in countries around the world who are basically dying for the right to vote. And it's something that we've had for an awfully long time and sometimes take for granted, and we really should not.
Okay, let's see if we've got a candidate on the line now. I hear someone laughing. That's good.
Hi, this is Christina Lugo, and I just wanted to say hello. I'm the Green Party candidate for U.S. Senate.
Ah, welcome.
I didn't hear anything about the Green Party when you were talking about Jeff and Monica, and I just wanted to remind voters that there are other candidates, and I'm one of them. I'm actually listening to KBOO right now, and I'm working, so... You know, I just want to make sure that all voices are at the table when we have these discussions.
Okay, thank you very much.
Much appreciated. Thank you. Yes, there are other parties out there that will be on the ballot, as well as Republicans and Democrats.
And in the voters' pamphlet.
Yep.
Okay, thanks for calling in and reminding us.
Anyone else on the line, or can we roll into the legislative races?
Oh, we have someone else coming up with a question or comment. They'll be with us in just a moment. And the call-in number again is 503-231-8187. And who do we have on the line now?
My name is Karen.
Karen, welcome.
And I really feel it's important to mention the governor's race because we have our incumbent, John Kitzhaber, who has really worked for the and a lot for health care reform. And we also have Dennis Richardson, who is an ALEC member. And I really have some concerns